Hi, everyone. This is the How to Lower Your Tax Bill podcast. I'm your host, Terrence Hutchins. I'm a financial and tax advisor in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And the goal of this podcast is to help you listeners get educated on different tax strategies that you can implement to improve your tax situation immediately. Each episode, we'll break down useful tax tips you can use to save money, no matter what your personal or business income situation. Because our motto is, keep more of what you earn. So let's get into today's episode. All right, so thanks for joining in on another episode of How to Lower Your Tax Bill. We've been going over a series relating to real estate, and we've primarily been looking at it through the lens of someone who's a W-2 employee. We're going to pivot a little bit and talk about more from the perspective of someone who's actually looking to go full-time in real estate. The things we're going to talk about will impact someone who invests here and there, but they will be more applicable to someone who's actually looking to do it full-time or has it as their full-time job. In this episode, we're going to break down what it actually means to be a dealer versus an investor, how the IRS decides whether you're a dealer or an investor, what the tax impact of that classification is, and then some strategies to help you protect your profits. So if you're a house flipper or you're looking to buy rentals or you want to do a little bit of both, this is going to be a good episode for you. Now, one of the more important aspects of getting into real estate or any other investment is assessing what you're trying to accomplish. If I want to quit my job, for example, and I want to live off my real estate as soon as possible, then that's going to take me down a different road than if I was someone who just wanted to build some additional long-term income that's going to supplement my other investments. Having an idea of what you're looking to accomplish at the beginning, as Stephen Covey says, begin with the end in mind. And so if I know what I'm trying to accomplish, that's going to help dictate the type of deals that I do and whether a deal is good for me or not. But in order to make it objective, whether I'm in real estate or any other investment, I think it's also important to have some kind of criteria that helps you filter out the investment that you're underwriting to determine if it's something you should invest in or maybe it's something that you should wait on. And so I personally have a 7-part component that will help me filter out investments that I look at or even help clients in that component to where they can simplify what is the aspects of this investment I'm looking at and then how is that applicable to me and how I'm assessing whether it's worth it or not. So those 7 criteria are, number 1, risk. What is the chance that I could lose my money in this deal? If there's more risk involved, then I am going to want, number 2, more upside. The upside is just the possible potential. The ability to make 20% is going to look different than something that makes 10%. But the risk involved and all the other factors could impact whether I would go with something that's just going to give me 10 versus something that's going to give me 20. That's normally how cap rates work on the commercial side, where a low risk investment is going to have a low cap rate. The higher risk investment is going to have a higher cap rate just because you're going to want to have more upside potential. You also have the tax treatment, which we'll get into specifically with real estate dealers versus investors. But what are the tax impacts of what you're doing is going to play a big role in what you decide to do as far as your investments. Also, control. Many people like real estate because they feel like they have more control over the outcomes. And there are certain things you can do to help drive up your returns, whether that's with financing or expertise. You also have effort. Real estate and other investments can look more like a traditional job. You want to measure, is your time better spent investing in this activity or just doing work in maybe the career you have or in your business, because you would end up with more money just putting more effort into that activity. There's also an element of time. How long is it going to take you to get your money back? If it takes me a year to get my money back, that's going to look a lot different than it's going to take 5 years. So I need to be compensated for the longer it takes me to get my money back. And then you also have fees. Now, fees can be a polarizing topic, but normally you want the fees to be worth whatever you're putting your money in. So it's not a matter of higher fee is worse. It's more about what am I getting for that higher fee and is it going to provide me with more value? So if you look at your investment options through these 7 things, I think it'll help you become a better investor and to be more objective. So let's get into the crux of this episode as we're talking about whether you want to be a real estate investor or whether I should say you would be classified as a real estate dealer or as an investor. So the short of it is, a real estate investor is someone who buys property to hold it. Maybe it's a rental or maybe it's land for long-term appreciation. You normally will buy this and think that, all right, this is more your traditional person. I want to go buy an investment property. I'll get a renter for it and I'm going to hold it. If I get an opportunity to sell it at a good price, I will. But that's not normally the intent of when you first buy it. Rather, if you're a dealer, that is actually your intent. You're looking to buy something in order to profit from selling it at a higher price, normally in a shorter period of time. So think of this as someone who is like a car dealership. They buy cars to immediately sell them, and they're trying to make a spread on what they originally bought it for and what they're able to sell it for, but they're not using time on their side to think that it's just going to go up in value by its own. So a dealer is thinking someone who owns real estate almost as if it's inventory. Now, that's important because that will determine whether you can pay capital gains or ordinary tax rates. It's whether you will also pay self-employment and whether you can use certain strategies like a 1031 exchange, which we've talked about in a previous episode. Now, to be clear, being a real estate investor does not necessarily mean you're a real estate professional. The real estate professional is a separate tax term, which we've got into previously, that's tied to rental property rules. So that's generally tied to your ability to deduct passive losses and also to avoid the net investment income tax of 3.8%. Now, of course, because of the IRS and our system is complex at times, or multifaceted, I should say, then you could be an investor, you could be a dealer, and you could be a real estate professional all at the same time. It just depends on the facts and circumstances of your situation. So if you talk to any tax professional, that word or that phrase, facts and circumstances, will be prevalent in how they evaluate your situation because so many things depend on what are the specifics of your situation. We're looking at the tax treatment behind whether you're a dealer or an investor. This is really the 15 or 20% question that you have to ask yourself. So number one, if you're considered a real estate investor, so you're someone who buys, is looking to hold the property that you have, when you sell, you're going to pay capital gains tax rates. Now, if you sell under a year, you're going to pay ordinary income regardless. But generally, if you hold that property for a year and a day or more, then you're going to pay capital gains tax on the sale. And that capital gains tax peaks at 20%. So that is a big difference between the ordinary income tax rate, which caps out at 37%. So that's a potentially 17% difference. You also have the ability, if you're an investor, to do a 1031 exchange. If you're a dealer, you aren't allowed to do that. You're not allowed to defer gains that you get from stuff that you sell. You also are not subject to self-employment tax. Because the IRS looks at you being a dealer as a business, they will treat you as if you're self-employed. So if I buy a house and I flip it and I make $50,000, they're thinking that that's actually income from a business and not just capital gain from an activity that you are investing in. So they'll look to add in that additional 14.13% tax on top of your profits. If you are an investor, you can actually depreciate your properties because they're not looked at inventory and you are subject to quote unquote wear and tear over time. The IRS will allow you to depreciate the value of your property, which is one of the big benefits of real estate, is being able to have a non-cash tax deduction that you're able to claim to offset any income that you make. Also, if you're an investor, you could qualify for the QBI deduction and you may not. It just depends, once again, on your facts and circumstances. However, on a negative front, if you're an investor, you could only deduct up to $3,000 of capital losses. This is very similar to if you owned a stock and you sold it at a loss. You could only use that loss to offset gains from other capital assets that you own, or you could only deduct up to $3,000 of your ordinary income. So if I sell a stock for $10,000 or I sell a property at a $10,000 loss and I make $100,000, I can only deduct $3,000 against my income. Any loss over and above that threshold will have to be carried forward to a future year, which speaks to why we talked in a previous episode about why you need to look at your last year's tax returns to determine if there's something you need to carry forward to future years. Also, though, if you're an investor, you may pay that 3.8 net income tax. We'll get into this on a future episode and kind of dive into more of the nitty gritty part of this. But if you're a higher income earner, which is generally, as the IRS defines it, more than 200,000 single, more than 250 married. If you have investment income, then you will be subject to pay an extra 3.8% on any investment income you make that is above the $200,000 or $250,000 limit. So if you make $300,000 as a married couple and you have investment income that exceeds that by $50,000, you're going to pay 3.8% on the lower of your investment income or the amount above the threshold. But importantly, if you're an investor, You could pay that. If you're a dealer, you don't pay that. Also, the selling expenses that you have, if you're an investor, they're going to be added to your basis normally, and they will reduce your capital gain. Versus if you are a dealer, those expenses, depending on how you look at it, they're just going to reduce your actual income. So the value of the expenses that you deduct is going to be higher, just as a byproduct of it's considered a business expense versus a capital expense or an investment expense. So the value of the deduction could be slightly higher, especially if your tax bracket is on the higher end. Now that we got into what a dealer is, what an investor is, what the tax impact of each, we'll get into how do you determine whether you are what you are. Now, this is one of the things where it's important to have conversations with your tax advisors ahead of time, because your intent is not always how the IRS will interpret your actions. The more you give them information to help dictate your intent, the more you'll be able to back up a claim for why you did what you did. I'll give you an example of that in a bit when we go through this tax court case. But when you're thinking about how do I determine if I'm a dealer versus an investor, I'm going to look at 8 different things. So I'll go through these one by one. Number one is your intent when you bought the property. Were you planning to flip it or were you planning to rent it? If you were planning to do one or the other, you need to document that at the beginning. Also, the number and frequency of sales. If you every month are thinking, hey, I'm going to buy this investment and hold it, but then I immediately sell it 3 months later and I have this pattern of doing that, even though you allegedly had the intent to hold it for investment, the IRS isn't probably going to see it like that if you're doing this consistently. Also, how did you improve the property? If you put a whole lot of money into it up front, normally people do that because they're wanting to sell it pretty quickly. If you just bought it and you put some lipstick on it, then you may not be looking as if you're trying to sell it at a much higher value than what you bought it at. Also, your marketing. How aggressively are you trying to sell the property once you bought it? How big and complex was the deal? Is it large scale? Is it kind of a one-off thing? How did you acquire the property? If you acquired it via inheritance or via gift, you're probably not going to be considered a dealer in that circumstance. And then how long you held it. If you've been holding this property for longer than a year, that's going to give you a lot better perspective that you are looking to hold it for investment versus you just being a dealer. If you're selling it after 3 months or 6 months, then you're more likely going to be looked at as a dealer if you're doing that consistently and you don't have a lot of the other factors that are on your side. And then how much of your income comes from selling? Once again, if you're trying to get out of your current job and you're looking to use real estate as your occupation, and all of a sudden your house flips becomes a primary driver of how much money you're making, then you're probably going to be looked at as a dealer. Now, ironically, you can be both depending on the type of property that you have. For example, you could flip a house in the same year that you buy a long-term rental. And so it's really going to be on a case-by-case basis, on a property-by-property basis, so that you will determine, am I being a real estate dealer in this case or am I being a real estate investor? Which is why you need to, number one, have objectives on the front end of why you make decisions that you do. But then secondly, how does the property you purchase feed into that objective? And then you can define to say, hey, the goal is to buy this house and to be able to make a 30% profit on it when I flip it. That's very clear. You're probably acting as a dealer in that case. Now, if you do this one time, I will tell you, if you're just trying to do a house flip here and there, I'm going to be treating you as an investor from a tax standpoint more than likely. If it's just something you did one or not, like I'm not looking at that as a business you started. If you just got an opportunity to buy a house for cheap and then sell it, we're going to look at that as you being an investor. But if you're doing this consistently, then you want to be documenting your thesis or your reason for buying on each property that you have. Now, if you are an investor and you don't want to be looked at as a dealer, then you're going to want to do a few things to help make sure you have that distinction. To say, hey, I don't want to pay self-employment tax on these deals that I'm doing. I don't want to pay the extra income tax potentially on the deals that I'm doing. So you're going to want to keep a separate account for each property that you have. So for example, my investment properties, they go in one LLC. My flip properties, they go into another one if you put them in an LLC at all. You'll also want to name that LLC tied to what its purpose is. For example, if I have a long-term rental, I might have ABC Investment Rentals. That would be the name, or I may have something related to investment in the title. Also, I want to use third-party brokers or agents. So I don't want to be marketing this property myself because that looks like I'm actually in the business of selling real estate personally. You also want to document your intent. So keep your corporate books, keep your meetings. We've talked on previous episodes about you don't have to do those meetings locally. You can travel and do them. That gives you an avenue to create some additional tax deductions potentially. But keeping that corporate formality to where you can document what you did and why will help you ultimately increase the amount of tax deductions that are available to you. Then you're going to want to deduct your expenses on Schedule E. You're not going to want to deduct your expenses on a Schedule C or anything else if you are considered an investor. And then you're going to want to track your time. Investors usually spend less time on a property than a dealer does because they're not looking to try to immediately sell it. So they don't have to spend a whole lot of time on that property. One other thing to keep in mind, though, is if you buy a property with one intent and then you change your mind, you're going to want to document that change of heart. All right. So obviously, as humans, we struggle with this. Think DeAndre Jordan when you have a change of heart. But if you do have a change of heart, just make sure you document it so that, hey, if I sold this and the IRS wants to question me, I can point to, hey, you know what? I was going to buy and flip this property, but I couldn't sell it. So now I'd listed it for rent. And even if, let's say, someone came and bought it after the fact, you still have a decent argument to say that, hey, I did flip my strategy. And then someone came and, unbeknownst to me, made an offer that I couldn't refuse. All right. So it's important to document, get an idea of what was in your head, because the IRS doesn't know what's in your head. All right. And so you're not in a relationship here, so people can't read your minds. So it's important to document that so that your intent is clear and you can always back that up and hopefully save you some money and keep more money in your pocket. Now, a few other things as we look to wrap up shortly. So a dealer, they're going to report their income on a Schedule C. And so that's where you're going to see that self-employment tax generated from a Schedule C. An investor is going to report their capital gains on Schedule D and then their actual income on Schedule E. So you'll have those two separate things that really start with you working with a tax professional, or you, if you do it yourself, make sure you report it in the proper way so that the IRS doesn't get the wrong idea. Now, why this is important, because let's just say you're in the top tax bracket, you're a high income earner already, and you go do a flip project, but it was like a one-off time. And let's say you made 100 grand on that project. Well, if you pay capital gains tax, you're only going to pay $23,800 on that flip property. However, if you're considered a dealer and you're in the top tax bracket, you would pay upwards of $51,000 in taxes. That's a $27,000 difference. So that would get someone's attention as to why they want to make sure they, number one, work with someone who is competent that can give them the right information so they report it accurately and appropriately, but also why they would want to make sure they know this, because ultimately it will keep more of what you earn. So finally, dealers buy to sell, investors buy to hold. Your intent, activity, and frequency of sales will help determine which one you are. The tax differences are big relative to investors only pay capital gains tax versus dealers will pay self-employment and ordinary income tax. Dealers, though, do not pay that extra net investment income tax. So it's something to keep in mind, because who wants to pay extra tax that they're not entitled to already? But it's important to document what you're doing, keep separate records. So if you have investment properties, keep that on one end. If you have flip properties, keep that separately. Now, if you are a house flipper and you are doing this quite a bit and you have enough profit, then you might actually consider holding your flip properties in like an S corporation. That will help reduce your self-employment tax. So that's something we'll get into in a future episode as far as S corporations and when you might decide to do that. But that is a strategy if you are a house flipper or a land developer or someone in that space, where you can use an S corporation to help shield you from paying as much self-employment tax as you would otherwise. So let's get into a tax court case. There was a guy by the name of Mr. John D. Byron, and this case went to trial back in the 70s. And so between 1971 and 1973, Mr. Byron was killing it. He sold 22 pieces of real estate, making him $9 million with a profit of 3.4. Now, it wasn't a matter of his profit. It was really about, was he considered a real estate investor or was he considered a real estate dealer? So although in this case, it only took, you know, 3-4 years for him to do this, and he sold 22 pieces of real estate. And obviously the IRS is thinking, hey, Mr. Byron, you're considered a dealer. You're doing this frequently. However, the court found that he was actually holding these properties for investment purposes. And so instead of paying ordinary income plus self-employment on that $3.4 million, he only was subject to paying capital gains. So big win for Mr. Byron. Now, the reason that they were able to distinguish this is because he was able to show his intent behind holding them for investment. He showed that he made no personal effort to initiate the sales. He didn't advertise them. He didn't have a sales office. He didn't hire a broker. He just kind of listed them like any other investor might. And he didn't actually look to improve the land that he did. He bought it. He held it. Someone offered him a price he couldn't refuse, and he sold it. Also, even though there were 22 sales over 3 years, the court determined that this frequency alone did not compel an inference that their properties were held primarily for sale in the course of the business. And so 7 properties a year might be a lot, but they didn't feel that that was so many that he was actually doing it on a frequent basis. He was just trying to buy and flip. All right. And it also showed that he didn't really spend a whole lot of time in this investment. So Mr. Brian was actually in a good spot, right? Making $3.4 million, which, you know, mathematically, he was making over 150 grand a deal, roughly. And so he was doing very well. It's just he wasn't spending a whole lot of time doing it. So he must have obviously gone through his investment filter and it spit out nice results. So this shows you that, yes, the IRS is not always correct. But if you want to beat them in court, if it came to that, you'd want to have proper documentation. You're going to want to back your case with prior case law or what the law actually says. And ultimately, you have the ability to win. And as our motto says, keep more of what you earn. So thanks for listening to our episode. Be sure to like and share it if possible, so we can get more people out there who are trying to, quote unquote, stick it to the IRS, for lack of a better term. And we look forward to talking with you next week.